This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Is different to other shiurim, particularly in the following sense. Other shiurim are absolutely textually orientated. That means that whatever chiddush emerges, it emerges directly from the text that one happens to be learning. The Motzei Shabbos shiur, I'm sure you've noted already, is not so. The yesod, the whatever it is that we reveal in the Motzei Shabbos shiur, is really a combination of a text and of life experience. Which stimulates the yesod is difficult to say. It's really the coming together. When I'm working on a particular chazal, it will click because of something that happens during the week or during the past few weeks. And the purpose of the shiur, or one of the purposes of the shiur, is to teach you how to do the same. That is, to integrate your life experiences and your weekday experiences with the chazal that you learn, with the gemaras that you learn, with the Torah that you learn. Not to see it as two separate things, but in fact to allow the two to stimulate one another. What you learn stimulates the way you do things during the week. And the things that have happened to you during the week are going to obviously affect the extent of your understanding of chazal. And in fact, the richer the kind of life that you live, the more varied and the more dynamic the kind of life that you live, the more you'll find in the chazal that you learn. The last couple of days I've been involved in running around Eretz Yisrael, and as usual it's an emotionally draining sort of experience from many different points of view, but particularly draining at the moment is the phenomena that nowhere in the world that I have been have I come across a people so low as the irreligious Israeli. Low in moral stature, low in refinement, low in language, low in ability to communicate, low in the way they dress, low in the way they relate to one another, low in the things they do, low in everything. You usually find one society or another will be low in a particular area. But to find a society that's low in everything is terribly disturbing. A couple of evenings ago I was having coffee on Dizengoff Square, on Dizengoff Street, which is not something I recommend anybody does if you want to enjoy your coffee. And as you sit in Dizengoff Square on any evening, you see a cross section of modern Israeli society passing you, thousands and thousands of people. And I did a little exercise. After all, they're all Jews and one's supposed to love them all. Out of all those thousands of people, I started counting. I took out a pencil and paper and I started counting how many of the young men and women I would allow to marry my children. So they're Jews, entitled to marry my children, but how many would I sit back and allow to do it? Well, I didn't need the pencil, I didn't need the paper, I didn't need my toes, I didn't even need two hands. One hand was enough. For an hour of sitting watching hundreds of people, Jews, on one hand I could count the number of people that I would allow, tolerate, to marry my children. That's terribly disturbing. And those five or six that I did find coincidentally happened to be wearing yarmulke. That's not what I looked for. I just looked for somebody that walked like a mensch. Didn't listen to what they were saying. I didn't even take note of how they were dressed. Just somebody who walked like a mensch. That's all I was looking for. And out of the whole lot, the five or six that I found, all were religious. Furthermore, as one travels around, and I was in Israel with goyim, I was in Israel with some non-Jewish businessmen, and they didn't note or didn't feel as bad or as hurt about what I saw, but what they did ask me is, how come that the underworld all over the Western world is now controlled by Israelis? How come is it that behind every shady deal you'll just scratch a little bit and you'll find somewhere at the bottom of it there's an Israeli? Is this the people of the book? And the whole thing is very disturbing. One has to appreciate that we're looking at Israeli society in the age group of about 5 to 25. Anything younger than 5 is too young to look at. Anything older than 25 is not a product of Israeli society. So we're looking at the group 5 to 25. Those are the people we're looking at. And what we see is not pleasant. And I want to understand that a little bit more clearly. Why is it that in Eretz Israel, after all, just the Kedusha of Eretz Israel surely should influence these people? Just the mere fact that they're rubbing shoulders with Gedolim, with Frum people, that they're in the Holy Land, surely this, just by virtue of its own natural effect, should affect them a little bit? And surely an irreligious Israeli should be at least as much of a mensch as an irreligious South African, probably a little bit more. But what is it that there's absolutely nothing? Obviously I'm generalizing. Obviously there are exceptions. But I'm talking not about individuals. I'm talking about a society. I'm talking about a group of people, about a whole social setup. Now we're told in the Sedra, Ele Toldos Noach. These are the generations of Noach. Noach ish tzadik, tomim hayab doroisov. Noach was a tzadik, he was righteous. Tomim hayab doroisov, he was, had this middah, this characteristic of simple perfection, straightforwardness. Eso Elohim, Eso Elohim, please, I'm giving, so Elohim is halech Noach. The Noach went with the Ribbono Shel Olam, whatever that means, we'll see in a moment. Vayoled Noach shloisha avonim. And Noach gave birth to 3 sons, Es Shem, Es Chom, Ves Yofes. Shem, Chom, and Yofes. So here we have the family, Mr. and Mrs. Noach, and their 3 sons and daughters-in-law, Shem, Chom, and Yofes, and their wives. And the Ribbono Shel Olam says he's upset with the society as it existed there, and he's going to bring a flood. A teva and ark will be built, and these are the people who are going to be saved. All of them. So apart from Noach, Shem, Cham, and Yofes must also have been outstanding people, because God was going to reconstruct human civilization from these 4 people. And he must have been satisfied that not only Noach, but also Shem, Cham, and Yofes were worthy of being saved. Who are they? Shem, Cham, and Yofes. Their names tell us exactly who they are. Shem. Shem means a name. We've often talked about the concept of a name, of a noun. I think more correctly one should translate the word shame as a concept. So shame is an intellectual. He has the ability to conceptualize. He has the ability to see things accurately, to know the names of things, to define things, and to handle with these definitions. So shame is the intellect. Cham. Cham is hot. He is the sensuous one. He is impulsive. He is intuitive. He is not intellectual, and he is not conceptual. He is impulsive, hot, intuitive. Okay. And Yofes? Yofes comes from the word Yofe, which is beauty. And also, Hirsch says, from the word Peti, which is a person who is influenced, who is open to beauty. Right, so he's a man who is capable of appreciating aesthetics. So we have 3 people. We have the intellectual, we have the sensuous, and we have Yofes, the aesthetic, a man who appreciates beautiful things. All of them go into the ark. All 3. That means the Ribbono Shel Olam is satisfied that there's a place in society for all 3. Not only is there a place in society for all 3, but in each one of us there's a little bit of all the 3. In one of us the one might be dominant, in another one of us the other one might be dominant, but we all have an intellect, we all have sensuality, and we should do, otherwise we must see a doctor, and we all have an ability to appreciate aesthetics, hopefully. All go into the ark. and all come out of the ark. We're told further on in chapter 9 verse 18, Vayiyu v'nei Noach hayotzi min ha-teva, and the sons of Noah who came out of the ark are Shem, V'chom, V'yofis. So all three came out. They went into the ark, they came out of the ark. God is still satisfied that these three sons, in addition to Noah, bearing in mind that Noah is not going to have any more children, okay, so it's really these three sons who are now going to perpetuate the human race. And God is satisfied, he put the three of them in the ark, and he takes the three of them out of the ark. But the Torah adds something interesting in that sentence here. V'chom hu avicha Noach. And Chom is the father of Canaan. Now, Canaan in the Torah is the concept of a nation that needs to be wiped out. Of a nation that has nothing to be said for it. No good whatever. And at the time of the giving of the Torah, Canaan was already recognized as such. When this pasuk was written, when this pasuk was given over, Canaan was known as a concept that has to be obliterated. It has no place in society and it has no place in civilization. So the Torah is showing us immediately something which requires studying. All these three wonderful people. But Ham was the father of Canaan. Something went wrong. As wonderful as all these three people, to the extent that the Ribbono Shel Olam was prepared to reconstruct society out of these three, it went wrong. And we're going to have to study what went wrong. How is it possible that a Ham, okay, he's not an intellect, okay, he doesn't appreciate aesthetics, he's a sensuous sort of a guy, but he was in the Teva with Noach. He was in the ark, he's going to be a pillar of civilization, not just of Jewish civilization, but a pillar of civilization full stop. By God's design, by God's own choice. So this is no small man. He's not the ascendant of Canaan. He's not the great-great-great-grandfather of Canaan. He's the father of Canaan. That concept that has to be obliterated is this man's own son. So in one generation, you can have total destruction of all the wondrousness of the previous generation. This we have to study.
Shloisho Eile Bnei Noach. These three are the sons of Noach, so that we should know society doesn't come, our present civilization doesn't evolve from anything other than these three. These are the three sons of Noach. Ume Eile Noftso Chol Haaretz. And from these, the whole of civilization spread out as offshoots. These are the roots of civilization. In other words, any study of history, if one doesn't want to start a study of history with Adam, which is difficult to start a study of history with because it's difficult to understand the whole concept of Adam, but certainly the study of history has to be started here with Noach and his three sons. This is where nations developed from. How did these three people have a place on the table? I can understand Shem. Shem is an intellect. So he sat and he learned Chavrusa with Noach. Fine. Yofis is a man who appreciates aesthetics, locked up in a dark box. And what does he do all the time? And Ham, the sensuous one, what does he do all the time? But Hirsch says very beautifully, and I think correctly, that the three qualities of Noach tie up with his three sons. Noach ish tzaddik. Number one, he was a tzaddik. Tzaddik means a beautiful man. Tzaddik is a righteous man, someone you look at and you see immediately the beauty of the man. To that, Yofes could relate. He could see the aesthetics of Noach's way of life, and he could appreciate it. And he was a Tomim. What does a Tomim mean? Without big intellectual reasons and philosophizing, he did what the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted of him, that's all. Ham can relate to that. If you start taking Ham in to learn Gemara, he gets confused. You start taking Ham into philosophy lessons, he gets confused. But if you say, Ham, this is what has to be done, he'll do it. He's a man of action. He does. And there's a tmimistic about him. There's a certain simplicity about him, a straightforwardness about him, a lack of complication. He does.
So he could relate to the tmimus, to the simplicity of Noach.
Esau Elokim Mishalech Noach. Noach was able to communicate with the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's the intellectual side. He could talk to God, he could reason with God, he could study God's Torah. That's where Shem fitted in. Shem could relate to Noach on that basis. So here you had the father Noach through, with three very different sons, which is a sign, by the way, of a good father, that each son develops in his own way as a completely unique and different individual. But the father is able to teach each son how to fulfill himself in Torah through him. In other words, each son is able to see his father as the image. If you would ask Ham, Ham would say, I follow my father's footsteps. My other brothers, I don't understand where they get this from. I follow my father, he's a Tomim, that's what I understand. All this intellectual nonsense of shame, and all this beauty of Yotis, where do they get it from? And you'll ask Shame, he'll say, you know, I don't know where Ham comes from, it's hard to believe he's a brother. I follow my father, he's an intellect, we sit, we learn Chavrusa, it's okay, I can understand. And so with Yotis, Yotis is, I'm an aesthete. I enjoy aesthetics, and the way my father moves, and the way he talks, and the way he lives his life, I can appreciate that. Ham can't appreciate it, Shame can't appreciate it. This is between my father and I. So each has a unique, private, personal relationship with his father. Each feels that he's following in his father's footsteps. Each sees the ability of fulfilling his own uniqueness through his father. His father teaches him how to do it. So you take a Ham and you treat him with Tzmimus. You take a Yotzes and you treat him with Tzidkus. You take a Shame and you treat him with intellect. You treat him with Esau Elokim, with concept.
That's really the concept of our tefillin as well, by the way. The tefillin are around our head, which is shame. That's the conceptual part of us. And the tefillin are next to our heart, which is the sensual and the emotional part of us. Sorry, not the sensual. Around our heart, which is the emotional, the yefet part of us. The sensitive part of us, not the sensual. And down the arm, which is the sensual, that's the action, that's the dynamicism of the individual. And they can all be tied together. One doesn't have to see a conflict. Provided they're all tied together, things can operate in order, there's no problem. Once those tefillin not start getting loose, then there's trouble.
But here we're told, the Cham hu avi kanan, something went wrong. The tefillin strap did come loose. And Cham fathered kanan. How did it happen? In the very next sentence we're told how it happened. And Noach, the man of the earth, began and he planted a vineyard. And he drank from the wine and he became drunk. And he rolled into his tent. Vayar Cham avi Chanan et ervat aviv. And Cham, the father of Canaan, again it mentions here, Cham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father. And he tells his two brothers standing outside. Up to there for a moment. We talked last night, about the essence of embarrassing, what it means to embarrass a person. And we said to embarrass a person is to reveal him, to reveal his strengths, certainly to reveal his weaknesses. To make his weaknesses public, that's something which is not allowed. That's something which is embarrassing. Noach finds himself in a situation where he's weak and unprotected. That's it, he's drunk, made a mistake. But when you're drunk and you made a mistake, it's too late to do anything about it. That's it, you've got to wait till it wears off. So Nebuch, he goes and he hides in his tent. And he hopes that at least nobody will find him there. But Ham finds him. What does Ham do? He publicizes the weakness of his father. That's what he does. And he goes and he tells his brothers. His brothers come. And Shem and Yefet came and they took a cloth and they put it on the shoulders of each of them and they walked backwards so as not to see their father and they covered their father. Their faces were not facing their father. And the nakedness of their father they did not see. Okay. Then Noach wakes up and he curses the children of Ham. In other words, he says, all that you produce, all the children you, Ham, produce should be slaves. You have to understand. Ham misbehaved himself in the ark as well. He did things in the ark which were not befitting the people who were saved and put into the ark. But he's not really criticized for that terribly seriously. He's not criticized in the Torah at all. And in Chazal, he's criticized, but no serious consequences, really, from that action. A person does an Avera, okay, you do an Avera. But let's see, what is it that created a Canaan? Because that's what we're studying here. We want to know, how is it that out of one of the people, who God chose to save civilization, that their child should be Canaan who has nothing good in him, whatever. How is it possible? So we're told here an action. It's not an Avera. It's not that he didn't keep Shabbos. It's not that he didn't keep Kashrus. It's not that he didn't keep Taras HaMishpocha. All these incredibly important mitzvahs and dinim. It's not even that he talked Lashon Hara. It's a midah. It's a bad characteristic. It's a bad moral aspect to his personality. It's a personality trait. It's a personality flaw. He sees his father in a position of weakness and he tells a joke about it. It's not because he did an Avera. It's midas. A lack of midas. The breakdown, the creation of Canaan is through a faulty midah, through a faulty human characteristic in Ham, his father. And what is particularly the area of the faulty characteristic? It's embarrassment. But it's embarrassing him, the embarrassment of his father. That's the particular area in which he falls down. To take your father's weakness and publicize that, that's treacherous. And that creates a Canaan. Why? Because the whole purpose and the whole method of the development of civilization is to take your father's strengths and start from there, and you should go further than he went. That means you should take his strength, acknowledge his strengths, learn from his strengths, and you in turn should cover up some of his weaknesses. But you should be a still better person than he was. And that your child should come along and look at you critically and say, these are your strengths, those I must adopt, and I must use those strengths to take still further and to move still further and cover up the areas of my father's weakness. That's really the progress of civilization. That's how one generation can become greater than the one before it. But if you start off by picking on your earlier generation's faults, and that's what you pick out, and that's what you play with and toy with and talk about, and you don't accept their strengths and move from their strengths, then you've got a Canaan. Then you've got a serious situation. What's the situation? Hedonism, particularly with a Cham. And what is a Cham? A Cham is a sensuous sort of person. So it's through his father that he's learned how to use his sensuousness. It's through his father how he's learned the concept of Tmimus. He's learned certain abilities in Avodas Hashem through his father. The moment he breaks that link between him and his father, what's left? Nothing. Something very dangerous. And Noach perceives immediately the danger and the potential harm in his son. And he says, now there's only one way you can fulfill yourself, and that's as a slave to your brothers. They'll tell you what to do and you go and do it. They'll tell you what wars they want fought, you go and fight the wars. They'll tell you what buildings they want put up, you put up the buildings. They'll tell you what countries they want developed, you develop the countries. But as a slave to your brothers, that's the only way you can fulfill yourself. If we leave you loose, then there's no knowing how low you can drop and to what depths you can reach. And there again, it's interesting that we have a tefillah for the shorosh, and we have a tefillah for the shelyad, for the heart. But the hand, we just tie up. That's just bound up. No tefillah for the hand. The hand is tied to the heart, and it has to function as something that is bound, something that is bound, something that is tied up and is enslaved. And it has to be directed by the heart, it has to be directed by the head. It can't operate on its own. It's dangerous.
What about Shem and Yefes? Rashi says, Vayikach Shem, Ein Ketiv Vayikchu, it grammatically should say, and they took, Vayikchu Shem Vayefes, they both took this cloth, Ela Vayikach, it says, and he took. Lamed al Shem Shinit Amet B'mitzvah Yoter Miyefes.
Teaches us that Shem put more effort into the mitzvah than Yefes. Vayikach, it says, and he took, Shem and Yefes took. But from the fact that it uses the word he took, that means that it's Shem, it almost should be read Vayikach Shem, and Shem took Vayefes and also Yefes, this cloth, and they covered up the father. That's how Rashi learns it. It's based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin. And as a result of that, says Rashi,
Lekach zochu bonov letalis shel tzitzis, therefore his children, Shem's children, had the schus of the mitzvah of talis. That's the origin of the mitzvah of talis and tzitzis,
comes from this over here. It's interesting. So it's not just that the mitzvahs create effects in us, but the mitzvahs themselves were created by the good deeds of people in earlier generations. Says the Netziv, in what way could Shem have put more effort into the mitzvah than Yefes? And what, two people take a big talus, a big piece of cloth. They can't, by the way they do it, one person can't do it. And they walk backwards to their father and they cover him up. What did Shem do more than Yefes did? Says the Netziv, very beautiful. The Netziv, what is Yefes? Yefes is a connoisseur of aesthetics. He appreciates beautiful things. For Yefes to see his father in a drunken situation, that hurts his sense of aesthetics. For Yefes to see somebody cover up his father, that pleases his sense of aesthetics. So Shem is going to cover him up, that's fine. Yefes is happy and completely fulfilled in the fact that his father is going to be covered up by Shem. That Shem is a Jew, or a potential Jew. And he's not the connoisseur, the appreciator of fine things. He's the spiritual man, the actor, he likes to do fine things. And he would get no fulfillment or not sufficient fulfillment out of standing back and seeing Yefes do the mitzvah. He wants to do the mitzvah. And he started off by telling Yefes, don't worry, I'll do it myself. And he called in Yefes afterwards, he said, I need you, I can't do it by myself. But his initial, Shem's initial reaction was, I want to do it myself. Yefes' initial reaction was, it has to be done, if you want to do it, that's fine. The concept of fighting over a mitzvah, that's something which is peculiarly Jewish. So you can have a guest comes into shul on Shabbos and Yefes will say, do you have somewhere to eat? And the guest will say yes. Yefes feels fine. The guest has got somewhere to eat. But Shem won't. Shem will go up to the guest and say, you have somewhere to eat? And the guest will say yes. And the guest will say, where? Where are you eating? And say, by Reb So-and-so. And he'll go to Reb So-and-so and say, won't you let me have the guest? Oh, you've had guests last Shabbos and the Shabbos before. Let me have the mitzvah the Shabbos. That's the difference between a Yefes and a Shem. Both appreciate mitzvahs, both appreciate refinement, both appreciate nobility. But Yefes appreciates the vision of it, he appreciates seeing it, understanding it, studying it, hearing about it. And Shem appreciates doing it. And he's not fulfilled until he does it. The concept of mitzvah, of doing a mitzvah, that's something which is peculiarly Shem. It's not Yefes. Yefes, by the way, was the founder, we read further on, of the whole of Western civilization. All of Europe, based on Greece and Italy and the Latins, all of Europe, all of the Anglo-Saxon areas, Russia, probably the Chinese and that crowd as well, the whole of Western civilization, what can be traced to the origins of Western civilization, is all founded by Yefes. We all appreciate good things, we all appreciate fine things, we all like to listen to a good and a clever intellectual idea. That's Yefes. Shem is the Jewish people. That's it. Shem does. Shem acts. He does mitzvahs. And here we see that these three brothers, who started off as equals, Shem was not any greater than Cham or Yefes. Each one had his method of avodas Hashem. Each had his way of serving the Ribbono Shel Olam. As a result of one situation, they put into a situation of pressure. Something has to be done immediately. And the three of them react in different ways. That's the classic situation of the modern sort of novel, probably the old novel as well, where you take a whole lot of individuals and you describe their backgrounds and all that, and then you throw them together in an aeroplane or something, and the aeroplane starts crashing, and you watch how everyone behaves. And this one looks after himself, and this one worries about his mother, and this one worries. Each one reacts in a different way, and it's through that pressure of reaction that you see who they really are. And then you're always surprised by the fact that they're not what they look like. The ones who look brave aren't the brave ones, and the ones who look meek and mild are the brave ones. And so it goes. So here, the Ribbono Shel Olam creates a situation, or rather it was in fact Noach who creates a situation in which a response is demanded from each of them, and that response determines the type of people they are to the extent that it creates nations. And it has tremendous ramifications. It creates European culture, Western culture, it creates slavery, some want to say African culture, and it creates Jewish culture. At this point here, the whole thing is created. And by this one scene, the drunkenness of Noah. So who really created it? Noah. And that's where it all started from. It was Noah's action of getting drunk that caused these three to come out in their true colors. What did Noah do wrong? says the Medrash,
Vayachel Noach Isha Adama, it says, and Noach started, Noach, the man of the earth, started to plant vineyards.
Firstly, says the Medrash, the word Vayachel started, Nitchalel V'naaseh Chulin, means that he lost his Kedusha, he lost his holiness, and he became secular.
Lama, why?
Vayitaker, because he planted a vineyard. Didn't he find anything else to plant but a vineyard? So there's a criticism against Noach here. The criticism is based on the word Vayachel, which means literally he started. There's a nuance to the word Vayachel. It has also the concept Chol. Chol meaning profane, secular. So we see it is by his action of starting which causes him to become Chol, which causes him to become profane, secular. No criticism against him for planting a vineyard. You need wine. You have to make kiddush. There's wine is used on the mizbeach, it's used on the altar. Yain yesamach levav enosh, it's a means of building up your spirits if you feel down. Wine is certainly part of the bria, it's part of the creation. It has a very important role in a Torah life, in a religious life, and one needs it. What he's criticized for is Vayachel. The first thing you do, wine. You don't have wheat. You have nothing of substance. You don't have any of the essentials. What do you plant? Luxury. And as a result of that, he's called in the next phrase, Ish Ha'adama. Can you imagine what a drop from a tzaddik, a tomim, Es Ha'elokim Is Halechna, righteous, perfect, walks with God, to an Ishu Adama, a man of the earth, an Amoret, that's what it means. Ishu Adama. What did it? He went into the ark, a man of God. He lived in the ark, a man of God. This is the first day he's out of the ark. He came out of the ark, a man of God. He brought a sacrifice, which the Ribbono Shel Olam accepts with glee, and on the basis of that sacrifice promises not to destroy people again. So he's still a man of God. And in one moment, he becomes an Ishu Adonah. Why? Vayachel. He starts with a wine. Let's see. If he would have used his intellect, you don't start with wine. You start with that which is needed. You start with your bread and your pasture for the animals and that which is needed. When you've got all the rest of it, comes the wine. If he would have used his aesthetic sense, okay, you'd have planted flowers and shrubs and things. You would have been criticized. That's an idiotic thing to do when you need bread to plant flowers. But that might be what a Greek would do. That's what Yekos would do. But to grow wine, that's Cham. That's coming down to one of his three levels. The whole brilliance of Noah was his ability to combine all three levels. And here he comes and he uses one, and it's his lowest one. It's Cham. Cham is high when it's together with the rest. But if you separate them, shame is the highest, then comes yefes, then comes cham. And he uses the bottom, he uses cham. And with a sensual response to the situation, looks around the world and it's desolate. And how does he see the means of improving the desolateness of the world? Need a bar, need a vineyard, something to drink, make the place look reasonable. For that he's criticized. So what happens? He has the problem with cham. That's it. You want to act like Cham? Okay. Now Cham is released. Now Cham no longer finds his route through you, Noach, to Yefet and to Shem. Now Cham is on his own with you, Noach. And you and Cham can communicate nicely. You rolling on the floor as drunk as anything, and Cham, see what kind of a relationship you'll have. And in walks Cham, and he bursts out laughing, and he goes and he tells his brothers. That's the relationship between a Noach and a Cham. When there's no shame and there's no yefes. The Jewish people have had an interesting relationship with these two, with yefes and with cham. One would think that we're much closer to yefes than to cham. One would think we're much closer. Here we see shame and yefes together responding correctly. Okay, shame more correctly than yefes, but basically shame and yefes responding correctly. Cham acting like a villain. Cham is damned to eternal slavery. Shem and Yefes are blessed, so one would think that Shem and Yefes have a much closer relationship, but it's not really so. We have a very strange relationship with Cham, and always have had, and a very distant but respectful relationship with Yefes. Cham was the father of Canaan, and of who else? Mitzrayim. The two breeding grounds of the Jewish nation. Canaan, Palestine, and Mitzrayim, Egypt. That's where we became a people. Avram lived in Canaan, Yitzchak was born in Canaan, Yaakov was born in Canaan, the nation formed itself in Mitzrayim, went back to Canaan. Our whole exposure to other people, to who of the Jews, in biblical times, to who were the Jews exposed? Only to the children of Ham. They had no exposure whatever ever to the children of Yefet. And that was the breeding ground. They grew out of that wicked, empty society of Mitzrayim and Canaan. They grew and they developed. And one sees and understands now the Torah's repeated warnings. Don't do like the people of the lands into which you're coming. Don't be attracted by their action, etc., etc. This was the danger that God saw for the Jewish people. You might think to yourself, what chance is there? The Jewish people got the Torah, the Kedusha of the Jewish people, becoming like Ham, becoming like Canaan. But we see from their origins that Ribbono Shel'olam knows exactly what he's talking about. Ham turned into a Canaan in one moment, and due to the action of Noah. Noah set the scene for it, and in one day, four great people left only two great people. And you had Ham, who had reached the absolute bottom of human civilization in a moment, in one day, by a foul action. Yefes, with the Greeks, we have a very respectful but distant relationship. So respectful, in fact, that we're told in the Mishnah in Megillah that mezuzah and tefillin have to be written only in Hebrew. But a Sefer Torah can be written in Greek. You know that? That you can have a kosher Sefer Torah written in Greek. We don't pass it that way today because we don't have that original Greek that they had in those days. But assuming we would have had that Greek, you can. And what's the reason? An incredible chazal. Hain the timer, says the Gemara in Megillah, Daf Tet Amud Beis, Amar Rabbi Chia Bar Abba, Hain the timer, Dichtiv, Yaft Elohim LeYefet. You see the pasuk inside. Yaft Elohim LeYefet, V'yishkun Be'ol LeShem. May God improve the beauty of Yefes and may it dwell in the tents of shame. Says the Gemara, Yafyutoshel Yefes, Yehei Be'ol HaShem. We should import the aesthetics of Yefes into the tents, into the Bosei Midrashim of shame. Incredible chazal. It means we respect the Greek's sense of aesthetics. And we're meant not to pursue it and not to get too involved in the development of that sense of aesthetics. That's their job. To develop beauty, to develop art, to develop culture and civilization. That's the job of Western civilization of the Greeks. But we must import that which is good and that which is worthwhile, that which is beautiful. We must import into our base of Medrash. It's not treif. If it's beautiful, it's kosher. So much so that the Greek language was considered so beautiful, and this is purely on considerations of aesthetic beauty, that in the time of the Mishnah, it was permitted to write a Sefer Torah in Greek. It was considered a more beautiful looking language than Hebrew. So it was Hidur Mitzvah, it was actually an improvement of the Mitzvah. I'm not 100% sure whether these were Sefer Torah that were then used and read out of on Shabbos or whatever, but certainly they were Sefer Torah that were used to learn out of, and very possibly to learn out of. Now one begins to understand the whole situation with the modern Israeli. That is, there are two indigenous cultures in the land of Israel. Shem and Ham. Those are the indigenous cultures. Not only in the land of Israel, but in the lands that provided most of the immigration to Israel over the last 30 years. Morocco, Algeria, Iraq, Syria, all the eastern countries are not products of Yefes, they are products of Ham. So indigenous cultures in Eretz Israel, there are only two. Jewish culture and Canaanite culture. There's nothing else. There are little bits of imported Yefes, or there should be little bits of imported Greek culture, but it's not indigenous. Indigenous, there are only two. In the rest of the Western world, there's only one indigenous culture. That is Yefes, Greek. In South Africa we have two. South Africa is one of the unique countries where we have Yefes and Ham. Right? In the eastern countries, in the Orient, you have Ham and Shem, Jewish and Canaanite. In Israel you have Shem and Cham. In Western civilization you have only Yefes. In South Africa, assuming that the black people are part of the Cham, and it seems so from the general description of Cham, who were also their descendants, were all dark. And Ethiopia is specifically mentioned as one of the descendants of Cham. Then here we have a unique situation of a combination of a Cham civilization and a Yefes civilization. So that's altogether an interesting study and quite unique. And perhaps America has it too with their Negroes, if they originated from a Cham area. So what happens here? So you'll have a person who's not from. You'll have a person who is not affected by Jewish civilization. And it's hard in the West, in the Golas, to breathe and to develop a purely Jewish culture. It's difficult because that's not the indigenous culture. The indigenous culture in the West is Greek, it's Western. And it's a continuous battle for the Jew to grow out of his Western culture, to adopt a Jewish culture and simply import from Western culture that which is fine and that which is noble. But that shouldn't be the core of his culture. That shouldn't be the way he thinks and the way he operates. That's the whole battle in which we're all involved at the moment. That's the move from Yefes to Shem. But let's say you're not, you haven't succeeded, and you have a Yefes culture. Very nice. Okay. You appreciate things of value. You appreciate spiritual things. Okay. Keeping halacha is a bit of a problem. Doing things. But you certainly respect other people keeping halacha. You certainly respect other people who are religious, other people to whom it's meaningful. When you see something nice, you enjoy it. You can even go to a shir, and if you hear a nice intellectual concept, you can appreciate it. It's a Yefes after all. As long as it's beautiful, as long as it has beauty and nobility and refinement, you can appreciate it. That's Yefes. But you go to Eretz Yisrael, there's no Yefes. There it's one of two. You're either Shem or you're Cham, and there's nothing in between. There is a society in between which Israel has produced, which is, I don't want to typify it by calling it a Bnei Akiva culture or a Mizrahi culture, but that's really what it is. It's a unique one. It's not an indigenous Jewish culture, and it's not a Cham culture. I'm not talking about, that's why I say I want to be very careful in that you should understand what I mean. I'm talking about the fellow who you'll see walking down Dizengoff Street with a yarmulke on his head and his arm around his girlfriend. Right? So some say it's paravan, some say it's trait. Depends how you see the mixing of meat and milk. But you know, Cham is an acceptable form of culture. Shame is an acceptable form of culture. The question is, when you have something which is neither shame nor Cham, then it's parava if it's neither, and it's treif if it's both. So one has to be very careful in that area. But the two indigenous cultures are Jewish and Cham, and this Canaanite culture. On the one hand, that leaves one very depressed in a sense, because now one understands the people walking in Dizengoff. They're not Canaanites, they're Jews. But all those warnings of the Ribbono Shel Olam, don't learn from the ways of the Canaanites. The Ribbono Shel Olam never said, don't learn from the Greeks, don't learn from Western civilization. He wasn't worried about that. Because, okay, so you learn from Western civilization, you're still a mensch. You're not supposed to waste time studying that if you don't know the Torah. You're not supposed to get involved in Hellenism, the intellectual problems of Apikursis and getting involved with Western civilization. Okay. But all these warnings in the Torah, careful, don't get involved in the actions of who? Canaan. The Ribbono Shel Olam isn't so worried about the West. They're mensch, they're human. They're people, they have a certain refinement, they have a certain moral character. Okay, you won't be a frum Jew, but you'll still be a mensch. Not, it's nearly the end of the world, but not the end of the world. But if you become a Canaanite, then there's nothing. You're not a mensch, you're not a Jew, you're an animal. You're worse than an animal. Because an animal has certain basic instincts. And that's why there's this continuous warning, careful about the actions of the Canaanites. What is the essential action of the Canaanites? Ha ha ha, look at my father, the stupid old man. What is modern Israeli culture? Those stupid old Jews in the Golas, they think they're still in the Golas. They think we still have to keep all those old-fashioned things. The origins of modern Israeli non-religious education is anti-religious education. It's changing now. But 20 years ago, when these people were being produced, the beginning and the start was, forget your past, you people, you came from Yemen and you saw your grandparents there and all that. That's all right for Yemen. Modern Israel doesn't work that way. You don't need a Yom Kippur, you don't need a Shabbos, you don't need anything, don't worry. Things are different now. The mockery of the older generation. That's the action of Canaan. That's the action of Canaan, which destroys a civilization totally. You can have nothing when you've got that. And now Israel finds itself with a problem on its hands. A society which is without morale, a society which is without morals, a society which is without idealism. And who created it? The original founders of what they then called Zionism. And they today realize that's not Zionism. That's danger. That's fatalism. Only today do they realize that there's got to be a total shift and there's got to be a move. The move would have to be by having a Noach at the helm. By having somebody who's able to show the Chams and everybody how to utilize their efforts for something ideal. But that's not easy in the modern state. There's a bright side to the coin as well. And with this we'll end. And that is, you look at religious culture in Israel. And I realized something which I hadn't fully realized ever before. That is, as you know, I'm very critical of modern religious society as well. And as bad as it used to be, it's even worse at the moment. There's no question about that. Modern religious society is also in a severe state of crisis. But if you look at them, there's not one that I would object to marrying my children. Not one. He doesn't dress the way I do. He does dress the way I do. He's got a strimal. He's got white socks. He hasn't. He has. But they're all human beings. They're all mentioned. This one learns a bit more. This one learns a bit less. This one learns this. This one learns that. This one has this rabbi. This one has that rabbi. It doesn't matter. But they're not going to beat their wives. They're not going to steal. They're not going to trample over people. You can talk to them reasonably. They appreciate spiritual concepts, even if they don't practice them all the time, even if they don't study them as they should. If you sit down and reason with them, they understand. What I realized is that one must be careful to distinguish between a society and a group of individuals. If you look at modern religious society as a society, then it's an incredible achievement, because you've got to look at it next to Dizengoff Street. Those are the only two societies Israel has produced. Modern Yeshivish society and modern Dizengoff society. Those are the two societies which Israel has proved. We're not talking about anything paravert, anything trait. In terms of real societies, these are the two societies that have been produced. And what a question of choice. I mean, it's like black and white. There's absolutely no question. And then one realizes the incredible achievement of the Yeshiva world. In creating not a group of individuals, they haven't been successful at that. They haven't created great individuals. They haven't created great leaders yet. But they've created a society in an environment of Canaan, in an environment of Cham. They've created an entire society with its schools and its hospitals and its old age homes and its holiday resorts and its legal system and its educational system and its adult educational system, a whole society of hundreds of thousands of people they've created. That's an incredible achievement. Then one realizes two things. Number one, that it's important to be able to fit into that society. And I've always said that I'm not trying to create here, for example, a sect or a little society. There are only two societies, or now there are three. There's Yefes, which you can see in Elof Street. There's Cham, which you can see in Israel or in Soweto and various parts. And there's Shem. And we are part of the Shem society. That's it. And we have to feel comfortable in the Shem society. And if you don't feel comfortable in the Shem society, then you're not part of that society and it's not right. One has to become part of it. You have to be able to walk into any place of Shem, of a Shem framework. It's a Lubavitcher Hasidim, or the Kloisenberger Hasidim, or some group of Misnagdim, or to this group or that group. If they are people who are Shomrei Halacha, they're people who are learning and keep Halacha, they're part of this society that we're talking about, you have to be able to integrate peacefully and harmoniously with them. If you can't, then you're not part of the Shem society either. The important thing to know, don't take your standards from your society. Even a Shem society. It's only a society, that's all it is. As a society, it's very good. But don't try and make it an ideal. Don't take that, put it up and say, this is where I'm striving to get. No. This is my framework out of which I don't move. But I'm striving to get far further up than that. That's after all what we learned in the Chazon Ish today. Chazon Ish writes in Bnei Brak, in the midst of such a society, and he says the danger is that you find yourself being schlepped off by your society. If you want to be Jewish like everybody else is Jewish, and he's talking about Bnei Brak, then okay, it's no fun. But if you want the Torah to affect you, if you want to become great through Torah, you've got to know that you're fighting against the stream even in Torah society. And now we have a dual relationship to define and to understand. That is, number one, we have to be part of that society. But number two, that's not where we take our standards from. We're continually striving higher, even if that means fighting against the stream of this Torah society.